is episode 4 of Cumberland County Historical Society's History TBD, and I'm here with Kara Curtis, our Archives and Library Director, who's going to tell me a little bit about Molly Pitcher and the myth and legend of her.
She's complicated. I think that's the easiest way to describe Molly Pitcher, or as I like to call her, Carlisle's Molly Pitcher, because there are probably at least 3 or 4 at least Molly Pitchers in existence. Some have very clear tales, and they all kind of form this one myth, and all of their stories kind of combine to this one legend of Molly Pitcher. And a lot of people also try to just completely discount Carlisle's Molly Pitcher, but she does have a story that is important. We can't prove some things we probably can disprove. A cannonball probably did not go between her legs, because that just logistically wouldn't have happened. She probably didn't meet George Washington, but she was a patriot. She, like many of these women, they followed the drum, or their camp followers, and so they'd follow their spouses, brothers in some cases, other family members. And so they not only did they march the great distances every day that the men did, but when they got there, they didn't get to relax and do other things. They're doing the cooking, the cleaning, the mending, taking care of the sick and wounded. So these women were incredibly important to the Revolutionary Army. Their support allowed a lot of the men to do the fighting that had to happen. And we know her first husband, William Hayes, was in Proctor's Artillery. He was a gunner. And we know she was there when he was fighting in the Battle of Monmouth on June 28th, 1778. What she did there, big question mark, we'll never know. Did she ever touch a cannon? I can't tell you that she did. But we do know that on February 22nd of 1822, Pennsylvania legislature passes the Act for the Relief of Molly McCauley for her services during the Revolutionary War. They didn't think it was necessary to put in what those services were.
Oh, how frustrating.
That is very frustrating. Like, just put in a few sentences about why you're giving this to her. But what is important here is it's not a widow's pension. They make no mention of William Hayes, or that her, and a lot of these, you see a lot of widow's pensions for other things, and they always make mention of the husband's service. And in this case, there's no mention of the husband's service.
It's very clearly for the work that she did. It's
for the work that she did. We just will never know exactly what that means. But yeah, after the war, when she's awarded this, she's living back in Carlisle. She moves around a little bit. She remarries after William Hayes passes away to John McCullough, who dies or leaves the area. We're not really sure, but she's alone by the 1810 census. She has one son with her first husband, John Hayes. And descendants still live in central PA, still live in Carlisle. So, but she only had one son. And she dies in January of 1832. And she just captures, I think, everyone's imagination, just because this woman, this colonial woman, the ramrod, the image that's always printed, mm-hmm. rightly or wrongly, this image of her. And then it's about, it's the centennial of the country in 1876, where her myth really starts to build up locally. So they put in a new tombstone for her on July 4th of 1876, a nice proper tombstone she gets. And then in 1905, they add the cannon and the flagstaff that we see today if you're at the, in the old, public cemetery, White Cemetery. And then in 1916, she gets the statue that makes her the most visible burial, in the old Carlisle Cemetery. And that statue is interesting because there's no actual representation of what she looked like. We don't know. There's no picture. Obviously, it's before photography. She didn't have the income to have a painting done of her. So they used her grandchildren and other descendants to kind of do a compilation of what they think she may have looked like, looking at her descendants. So maybe the statue actually does look a little bit like
some
her.
Some resemblance of what
she could have looked like. She obviously wasn't 9 feet tall. She's probably known to be a very short woman. She was known to be crude in the sense that she used foul language and maybe drank, maybe had whiskers on her chin. Some of these stories come out. We do know in later years she was working for the county, cleaning the courthouse and other buildings, washing the steps, doing these things. She dies at the home of her son. That house, which is on the corner of Bedford and North, is torn down now. There's pictures of, actually in the collection here, of that house kind of being dismantled. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of, there's little bits and pieces of her life that show up in the records, but obviously there's no photography or anything that you're going to see visually in that sense. But
do we know if she was ever called Molly Pitcher in her lifetime?
Not that I can see.
Do we know when that started? Because there's multiple Molly Pitchers across the country.
I don't know when that really comes out. Yeah. That'll be an interesting question to go back and look into.
Yeah, because there's lots of myths of American mothers.
Yes.
And she is among them. But I've always been curious as to when that really started and if she ever heard herself called Molly Pitcher.
And some say, part of the legend probably, that, well, Molly is a common nickname for Mary and Margaret. Mm-hmm. So, and a lot of these women are called Mary and Margaret that end up being called Molly. So, and that their one goal was to deliver water to the troops. So, saying Molly Pitcher, mm-hmm. maybe that's where it comes up. So maybe it's more of an action than a name, and it just becomes what they're known as. Mm-hmm. But that's a good question. And yeah. And her obituary does talk about her living through the Revolutionary War. I think they use the phrase scene of blood and carnage in her obituary. Doesn't mention her touching a cannon, doesn't mention any of that. And there's a kickback at different times when they're putting in the statue, or talking about putting in the statue, which would have been expensive. Some local people, especially Jeremiah Zimmer, who was an editor of one of the local papers, put together a pamphlet and stuff, and basically was like, this is all wrong, this is all a lie. So there's always been some kickback to the myth of her as it developed, and it's really developed 50 some years after she dies that this myth really gets reported and built up. So they're not really talking about it when she dies, and maybe it was just because they knew her. They do know she served in the war. She did get a pension from the state.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody else in the area get pensions from the state for their own personal service women?
That I'm not aware of, but I haven't really looked to see.
Because you could see how a myth could start to arise if there's only one female.
Or very few.
Got a pension in their own right, how those myths could start to
evolve. I can see easily how that added to her story. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, throw in another one of these Mollies, is Margaret Cochran Corbin, who's born in Old Cumberland County, which is modern what is now Franklin County, and had a rough upbringing. Her becomes an orphan fairly early on. Also follows her husband during the war, and she's wounded during a battle and actually taken captive for a period of time by the British as well. And she receives she's the first female to receive a pension from the federal government. Mm-hmm. So Congress approved her getting a pension, and she ends up on an invalid list as well because she is, I think she loses the use of one arm completely. And she doesn't come back to Central PA after the war, and her parents had died when she was little, all the things. So she wasn't really tied to this area in the same way that Molly had lived here before the war came back. So she ends up living out the rest of her life in New York. And in the 1920s, their local chapter of the DAR moved her, reinterred her at the West Point Cemetery. Mm-hmm. So her story is probably a little better documented than our Molly. And it's probably a bit of their stories together. Because if you start reading about Margaret Corbin Cochran, you're like, this all sounds very familiar.
It's a little overlap.
Yeah. Although her husband does die in battle, whereas William Hayes, Carlisle's Molly Pitcher's husband does not die. Whether he's wounded or collapses of heat. It would have been very hot that day, probably. I don't know what happens, but he definitely lives through the war. Mm-hmm. So that part of the story is definitely wrong, that he died in the battlefield. William Hayes definitely lived through the war. We know that. So if you start looking at these different women, you can see kind of how their stories probably converge together and that there are definitely similarities in between
them.
Create
that myth that begins to arise.
And I think people like that because a lot of the Revolutionary War stories are very masculine.
Mm-hmm.
And so people like hearing the stories of women during that time, and especially women that stood out and did something out of the norm and, you know, took a stand. And she is a patriot. There's no question that Carlisle's Molly Pitcher is a patriot. People have joined the Daughters of the American Revolution or Sons of American Revolution under her service,
mm-hmm.
whatever that is. So she is considered an American patriot as far as some of these lineage societies feel. So she's an interesting woman. Another woman that probably would have been very interesting to sit down and have a conversation with. Unlike the other one, she was not born here, came here probably as a teenager, as a servant. But then lived out, minus her time during the war, the rest of her life in Carlisle.
Mm-hmm.
So spent most of her life here, even though she wasn't originally from here, but an interesting woman. An interesting story in one. We're never going to have all the answers for. We find interesting things. She had a dog license. We know that. She had a dog. But there's lots of things that we may never fully know because
know
they
all
just
of the answers to.
They just didn't record it.
That's what makes a legend.
What makes a legend. And we love the legend of Molly. We loved the story of Molly. And we know she existed. We know she got the pension. We'll just never probably know for what. And maybe there's some fun in never having all the answers for having that legend and realizing that we're never going to know. And that's okay. But it makes it fun. And it's a good story to tell school kids and other things that, you know, there is fact in there. But then you can talk about the myths and some of how these myths happen, like Paul Bunyan and all these other things,
mm-hmm.
Johnny Appleseed. So there's fun to have legends. It's fun.
So if somebody wanted to learn a little bit more about Molly Pitcher, do you have any recommendations for them?
We do have some things here. We do have a copy of, a notarized copy, actually, of the Act of Relief.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to go to the state archives to get that, although you could. We do have a copy of that. In the early 20th century, the society and its members pooled funds together to buy a pitcher that was owned by her. Not a pitcher she used in battle, definitely not. But that pitcher, Molly Pitcher's pitcher, tends to be on display in the military gallery. And there's some paintings, and there's obviously no paintings at the time, but there have been paintings and other artistic renditions of her done over time, and we have some of those. And we have some nice pictures of some of the celebrations that were done at her gravesite over the years as they've added different things and different mm-hmm. ceremonies have happened. So there are some pictures of that, which are fun to look at. There are some things here. And we, tax records, other things that, you know, if you really want to get into dig down and deep into some of those things. I will say that her son is John Hayes. But this is a separate Hayes family than John Hayes of Frog Switch. They're two different Hayes families in Carlisle. So those families were not connected. So there are definitely two different Hayes families.
So there's quite a rabbit hole you could get down.
Yes.
If you wanted to do some research into the families.
You can definitely dig down, and probably more to be said about her son and, you know, his life and, you know, her descendants. There's stories there, I'm sure, you know, the grandchildren of Molly Pitcher and what they did with their lives. I'm sure there's some interesting stories to be told about them. Yeah, what do you do if your grandma's Molly Pitcher?
Tell her story. Keep the legend going.
And they definitely are descendants still living in the area. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Kara. I appreciate it. And
it was fun.